Conference Committee on House File 778 to order. Thank you all for your patience as we're waiting for the report to come in. I think what we're going to do for tonight's purposes is we'll have Mr. Gearing walk us through the Conference Committee language, and then we will take testimony after that point. But if Mr. Gearing, if you want to kind of walk us through and highlight the changes and all that good stuff.
So, Madam Chair, the document I'll walk through is CCR HF0778. In the upper right-hand corner is titled Conference Committee Report on House File 778. Section 1 of Article 1 was identical language between the House and the Senate related to data practices associated with free or discounted admission tickets or other gifts received in public facilities. Section 2 goes with a series of sections that appears later in Article 1 that relates to the way the state receives value from the consignment of suites in the stadium. That Section 2 and Section 3 both relate to that process. Section 4 provides a definition of stadium space. This is the term that is used later in the bill to restrict access to suites and other amenities in the stadium by the authority and its members and staff. Section 5 is the section that relates to the structure of the MSFA. So this structure comes from primarily from the Senate language. So there are three members that are appointed by the governor, and the addition here is confirmation by the Senate and the House of those appointments. And then additionally, in paragraph C of Section 5, you see that there's House and Senate confirmation of appointees by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis. Also in this section, you'll see that there is language related to removal of members. Removal is only for cause. Section 6 on page 5 relates to the compensation of the chair of the commission. So for fiscal year 2018, the chair of the authority is allowed to receive a salary of up to half of the amount of the executive director. Then beginning in fiscal year 2019, the chair is required to receive the compensation equal to the compensation of other board members of the MSFA. Section 7 requires that the authority members themselves appoint the chair. This is a change from current law, which provides that the governor appoints the chair. Section 8 authorizes the legislative auditor to conduct examinations of the authority's finances, budgets, and expenditures. Section 9 provides a cap on the salary of the executive director of the MSFA of $135,000. Section 10 on page 6 requires the authority to submit its annual budget to the Commissioner of MMB and to the appropriate House and Senate Finance Committee chairs. Section 11 on page 6 provides some items that need to be posted on the MSFA's website, including its budget, use agreements, and other documents. Section 12 on page 6 prohibits employees of the MSFA from engaging in partisan political activity as a condition of their employment with the body. Section 13 requires additional reports to the Legislative Commission on the Minnesota Sports Facilities and to the Senate and House Finance and Ways and Means Committee chairs on a number of items, including new reports on actual revenues and expenditures of the authority, events, and expected and unexpected maintenance and capital repair. Section 14 is a new section that relates to the way the state would receive benefit from consigning its access to suites back to the Vikings. So the way this process would work is that the authority is required to negotiate an agreement with the primary tenant, which would be the Vikings, to consign its access to suites. And then the Vikings would then sell those suites to third parties for use during NFL games and other events. And then there's conditions in here on what the terms of that consignment agreement must include. That includes in Clause 2, starting on 7.19, that the state would receive a percentage of the revenues that the Vikings receive from consigning those suites. So the revenue amount would be 90% of any revenues received up to the first $400,000, and then after that, the state would receive 65% of any additional revenue beyond $400,000. And that relates to the way the state pays operating expenses, which I'll talk about next. Also in this section, Clause 3 authorizes the authority to retain for its management vendor an option to access one suite during up to two NFL games in each calendar year for marketing purposes. And then Clause 4 provides that this consignment negotiated agreement would be effective for a five-year period beginning August 1, 2017, and then renegotiated in 2022 and every 5 years thereafter. Paragraph B at the bottom of page 7 is a data practices provision that provides that certain data that would be have some economic value to the primary tenant would not be disclosable up until 5 years after the terms of the consignment agreement would expire. So eventually the data would become public, but not for a period until 5 years after the agreement is complete. Section 15 requires additional reporting on stadium space use by authority members, staff, and vendors to the governor, the mayor of the city, and the chair of the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities and some other legislative committees. Section 16 provides that the authority must adopt the current version of the state code of conduct that's promulgated by MMB. Section 17 is a new section that regulates the authority's use of stadium space that's provided to it under the terms of the use agreement. So there's restrictions on the use of stadium space by members and staff in Subdivision 2, including restrictions on use for only for legitimate business purposes. And in paragraph B there, you see that authority staff may only use stadium space based on express written assignment of duties by the executive director. And in all cases, the authority would need to approve by vote of the full authority at a public meeting any of those legitimate business purposes. Subdivision 4, towards the bottom of page 9, regulates the use of stadium space by family, friends, and other guests. Again, they can only use the space for a legitimate business purpose, which in this case would be being a prospective user of the stadium. Subdivision 5 regulates the use of the stadium space by the management vendor for marketing purposes, and there's some additional reporting that would be required if the suites are used for that purpose. And sub 6 on page 10 provides that nothing in the section would limit the ability of an authority member, staff, or family, friends, or other guests from purchasing tickets or access to a suite on the open market. Section 18 relates to the operating expenses, the state's share of the operating expenses for the stadium. So the way this works is that the state would reduce its obligation to pay for operating expenses by the greater of $400,000 or the amount received in excess of that through the consignment of the suites for fiscal years 2018 through 2022. And then beginning in fiscal year 2023, the state would receive whatever amount is received through the consignment, and that amount that's received would offset the state's share of the operating expenses for the stadium, and then the amounts that are received under this section will be put into a separate account that once it accumulates to a sufficient amount will be used to pay down the stadium bonds. Then section 19 relates to a fee that may be enacted this session related to the tax bill. And Mr. Michael is in the audience, may be able to provide some detail on that if members have questions. Section 20 on page 12 restricts the authority from charging a fee to the high school league for use of the stadium, including fees that would be charged through a management company, which did happen recently. Section 21 on page 12 requires the MSFA to make every effort to recover the fair market value of food, parking, tickets, and other amenities provided prior to January 1, 2017, if those provisions were not in the public interest. And Section 22 requires the legislative auditor to conduct a review of major sports event facilities in Minnesota that are both publicly owned and publicly operated. And there's detail about what must be included in that review. Section 23 is a repealer that repeals some obsolete language related to the first enactment of the stadium bill. And then Section 24 is an effective date. So what would happen here is that the terms of all current members of the authority would terminate as of June 30th of 2017, and then there'd be new appointments to begin July 1 of 2017. And then, Madam Chair, Article 2, which runs through the end of the bill, is Senate language that provides a number of miscellaneous cleanups and technical changes related to the operation of the MSFA.
Members, any questions right off the bat at all? Okay. If not, I think we'll go towards testimony. Mr. Lester, I understand that you want to testify. I'm sorry, Mr. Bagley. I'm sorry. Yes. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, Lester Bagley, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Vikings.
Michael Grimes, a partner at the law firm of Briggs & Morgan, representing the Vikings.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight, and we appreciate the work that you're doing on this legislation, and we understand you're seeking a solution regarding the suites that will maximize the benefit to the state, and we appreciate that. And we've been trying to be collaborative and cooperative and work with you and provide feedback. We appreciate that opportunity. However, unfortunately, this House language is not workable, and we're not looking to benefit from this situation, but we also can't agree to a solution that doesn't work. Understand that you have your work to do, and the current language that you just went through impacts the use agreement between the Vikings and the Stadium Authority, as well as other stadium contracts. So this legislation would have impacts on several contracts with the stadium. So thank you very much for the chance to comment. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bagley. Did Mr. Grimes want to add anything at all? Or?
I'll be happy to answer questions as they come.
Okay. Mr. Michael, I've got a question for you based upon the comments that Mr. Bagley had. So has the state ever been in a situation where we have modified things like this? Can you kind of give me a little bit of the history of things? Or?
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, I think what you're alluding to is the ability of a subsequent legislature to essentially change the terms that are set in statute or by appropriation of its obligations. And it's, as you and I have discussed, there have been a number of instances in the past where the state or the legislature has made commitments to provide financing for facilities, and a subsequent legislature has come and concluded that it was prudent to modify those or to actually essentially unappropriate the funds for those, and the courts have generally upheld, that the courts have upheld the power of the legislature to essentially a future legislature to change an appropriation unless it's part of an actual bond contract, which this is not. And I think, obviously, the expectation here is that the amount of revenue that the authority will get from remarketing these suites will more than offset the reduction in the operating expense subsidy that the state is paying to the authority.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Members, any questions at all? Senator Champion.
So perhaps I didn't catch something that he said. So your question was about modifying, the history of modifying a contract and whether the legislature has ever done that. And so perhaps you can help me. So is it your testimony that how it's constructed here would hold up to legal muster for us to now go in and change a contract, especially when you think in terms of the impact that this would have, this suite arrangement would have on the use agreement and other contracts, stadium contracts? Will this pass legal muster?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, I think it's very clear that the legislature has the authority to reduce appropriations in the future. In the sort of one of the big instances in which this was done was when the monorail was built at the Minnesota Zoo back in the 1970s, and that was funded with certificates of participation that were backed by revenues from that, from the ride, and the expectation was that those revenues would provide sufficient funds to pay for the cost of those bonds, but It was also backed up by an appropriation. And as it turned out, of course, that proved to not be, did not prove to work out as the financing as people thought it would. And a subsequent legislature, like within 2 years, came and repealed the appropriation. And the investors in those certificates of participation sued the state and insisted that they had a contractual right to the state continuing that appropriation. And the Minnesota Supreme Court said no. The legislature always has the right to unappropriate, to change its appropriations. And so anytime anyone enters a contract with the state, it's implicitly subject to that ability of a future legislature to decide whether it's going to appropriate money. If there's an appropriation, they're very well that can fund it, then there is actually an obligation to pay. That the same circumstance came up in the 80s with a contract for financing an alternative energy facility at St. Cloud, Minnesota University St. Cloud, or whatever it's called now, what used to be St. Cloud State University. And in that case, the same result obtained. There are multiple cases that basically hold that the legislature has the right to change its appropriations in the future, unless the state issues general obligation bonds, in which case then there's more or less an ironclad obligation. And in fact, there's a mechanism in the Constitution that provides for actually levying property taxes to make sure those obligations get paid.
Senator Champion?
Good. Nothing more.
Senator Rosen?
I may have some additional questions later.
Sure, sure. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Grimes or Mr. Backley, you mentioned it impacts the use agreement in several contracts. I mean, it's somewhat vague. Is there any other information you could give as far as contracts with the state, other contracts with other vendors, and does this compromise the use agreement?
Mr. Grimes?
Let me start with the use agreement. It's
Mr. Grimes, could you speak a little louder?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Is this better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I don't want to feel like I'm shouting at you. In the first instance, in looking at the 2012 legislation, we're unable to find an authorization for the authority to actually take a suite or two suites as authorized by the legislature. There is language that provides for the authority offices, and for other uses within the stadium to operate the stadium. The legislature may consider that the contracting for these two suites wasn't authorized by the original legislation. That would cause the Vikings, as the other contract party, to say that if it was unauthorized, if it's not legal, then it should be severed from the contract, and there is a severability provision within the use agreement to provide for that severing. Second, under the use agreement, the grant of the two suites to the authority was for the authority's exclusive possession and use. Exclusive. Not exclusive and non-exclusive, but exclusive use. The proposed use of the suite in allowing third parties to use that would, we believe, cause the authority suite to no longer be an authority suite, but rather just a suite under the use agreement. And under the use agreement, all suites are under the control of the Vikings, and the Vikings have all rights to revenue. Those are problems under the use agreement as well. That addresses that piece of it. The authority has been, through the development period and construction period, very, very concerned about assuring that it had adequate revenues to meet operating expenses and to meet the expected facility standard. And all of their sources of revenues, including those that were coming from the city and state, were taken into account. And we aren't privy, I'm not privy, Lester probably is, to the budgeting process that they're going through and how they are funding all of the initiatives from this year to 5 years or 10 years from now to meet that expected facility standard, which is set out in the use agreement. With respect to the $6 million that's appropriated and the offset that Mr. Michael talked about, I think there's a supposition, an assumption, that any revenues, if it's possible that the authority could license those suites for its own profit and competitive purposes, then what those suites would license for would be questionable, and you have to take into account that the raw numbers of what that might be licensed for, whether there were downtimes where it wasn't licensed, uncollectibles, and all of the other issues that might drive those revenues down and not make up the amount that the state was to bring in. The legislation says the greater of $400,000 in the revised version or the amount taken. I would suggest that if it were to be properly written, it would be the lesser of, to make sure that the authority and its best efforts in generating revenues for this purpose would not be caught short because of the use of greater rather than lower. In any event, we feel that that's just the use agreement. Then you have the management agreement with SMG, and SMG has certain financial arrangements whereby it takes certain risks with respect to the stadium and its operations. We haven't consulted with SMG regarding this legislation. They may be very, very interested in how, in its contract with the authority, it might be affected by any legislation that would adjust contributions or the individual issues that it has with its profitability. And it was a very well-negotiated contract. I think SMG is making it work or barely making it work, but any seismic change to that could cause some issues with management. Those are my initial comments. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Senator Rosa? I do have some questions. I'll get to you, Senator Champion. Mr. Michael, so talk to me. We, as the legislature, we do have the authority to give direction to MSFA. Is that correct? And I don't know if that's you or Mr. Gehring. So,
Madam Chair, I think either of us could answer. The authority is a creature of the state statute. It's, I believe, probably a political subdivision that the legislature created. And, yes, you have plenary authority over the authority.
You know, either one of you, Mr. Michael or Mr. Gehring, too, and by having authority over the MSFA, we also have the authority to direct them to dispense with assets that they have with under their control, correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. You can certainly tell them or direct them or require them.
Okay. Senator Champion.
So your questioning really brought up a couple more questions for me, but maybe I'll just stick to what I was going to ask. To the testifiers, I am looking at page 6, line 6.12 to 6.17, which talks about the website. And even though this may seem like a small thing, but I want to see if it causes you any indigestion. If you notice that it says that the website must also include, but not limited to, each annual budget, each use agreement, each management agreement and each sponsorship agreement to be put on the website. Do you have any concerns about those agreements being on public display?
Mr. Bagley or Mr. Grimes?
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, I don't think so. I mean, I think they do. It's a public agency. They try to put all their information on the website. Defer to Mr. Grimes, but I personally don't see an issue with it.
Mr. Grimes?
No, I do not. Data Practices Act will determine whether or not there are exemptions, but we fully expect that all of the contracts that are entered into by the authority, once they are completed and signed, would be a public record.
Senator Champion?
Thank you. And my next question goes back to Mr. Michael. Mr. Michael, you said that the legislature has the authority to intervene in this agreement. So does that also mean that we take on the liability if we were to intervene and breach a contract? Because if the authority has a contract with, let's say, the Vikings, and there is an understanding in that contract what is supposed to occur, so are you saying that, yes, we have the authority to do it, but we also have to be prepared for the liability that would come as a result of breaching a contract? Can you speak to that, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, Senator, the certainly the liability of the state would be limited to the extent that it appropriates money to actually pay. Now, the authority does have a contract, and they will be liable. And so, to the extent that this does in some way impact that, the liability is very likely to fall as between the Vikings, the primary tenant, and the authority. And I think the underlying supposition is that the authority has sufficient assets, including its ability to control these suites under the use agreement, that it will more than equal the, whatever liability that is. That the whole notion here is that essentially an asset is being that is the use of an asset is being converted to another use that will actually enhance revenues of the authority, and that will be sufficient.
Senator Champion,
here, but Mr. Michael seems to suggest that simply because it's an asset to the authority and there will be additional revenue for the authority, that it doesn't create a detriment for the other party, and that's where lawsuits are born and raised. So have you, Mr. Michael, had an opportunity to look at and be able to tell us with some level of specificity what would be our liability exposure, both for the use agreement, if we were to breach that, and as well the management agreement?
I think, Mr. Michael, I think what was helpful for me is describing how our payments work, and maybe if you could help with that as well as answer Senator Champion's question, and then just to verify, he has nonpartisan staff, so Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, the state's liability is going to be limited to basically what you appropriate to pay. And I have not read, and I'm not familiar with the details of the use agreement, and so I'm not prepared to advise you at all about what the obligations may be one way or another. The practical reality is that I think it's in the interest of both parties here, the tenant and the authority, given the changes that are in this conference committee report, to determine what's the most practical and efficient financial way to maximize the value of those suites. And I'll leave it at that. With regard to the chair's question, I think this $6 million appropriation that's in the statute was $6 million in the first year. It's actually adjusted each year upward by an adjustment factor that's based on how fast the Minneapolis sales tax is growing. And so, for example, I believe that MMB is estimating that in January of 2018 when they make their next payment. It won't be $6 million, but it'll be $6.25 million. In fact, they've that operating appropriation just grows automatically, whether operating costs grow at the same rate as Minneapolis sales tax revenues, that may be an open question. It's the kind of thing I think that the legislature always has the ability to come in and look at, is this still appropriate for us to be paying this much money for this activity?
Senator?
Madam Chair, maybe I'm confused about something. It's because I think I just heard the testifiers say that based on their agreement, and I haven't had a chance to read the agreement, and so I can't tell you word for word what it says, but it sounds like is that under the agreement, the use agreement, that the suites are under the auspices of the Vikings. And under their agreement with the authority, that under certain circumstances, two of those suites then could be used for the authority to do something for legitimate business purposes. But it sounds like to me that if we are redetermining or reshaping what those suites are, then we are changing the agreement, and then it would appear that those two suites then go back under the auspices of the Vikings because now we have changed the definition of them and their use. And am I right about that? Maybe the attorney can tell me if I'm off base or not.
That would be our contention.
Senator Champion, I mean, the consignment proposal or thought of the consignment option was actually something that the Vikings had presented as an option. And so this is taking their proposal and making sure that we're, you know, protecting the assets of the state. But, Mr. Grimes, if you want to offer any comments.
It was my understanding with respect to the idea of a consignment that was in the discussion of possible alternatives that given the complexity of the issues that have to be resolved, that the legislature would pass legislation that was more like the Senate bill than the House, and that would give the parties time to sort that out. I wasn't part of those discussions, but the idea of a consignment might be one of many. But if I may, Madam Chairman, the disposition of the authority property anticipates in the 2012 legislation, as indicated by Mr. Michael, that the authority does have the right to sell, lease, or otherwise dispose of its personal property that is no longer required for the accomplishment of the authority's purposes. We, just as a legal matter, I'm not being argumentative, but this is, if the legislation is passed, we've got to make certain arguments, and that is that if the legislature is asserting at U.S. Bank Stadium and at Target Field that each authority should not have and didn't have authorization to have a suite, then those suites do not exist. And so it assumes that there is a property right there that wasn't authorized under law. But under our use agreement with the authority, with the Vikings agreement with the authority, there is only exclusive use by the authority allowed. And that use was not contemplated to be third-party use because that would put the authority in competition with the Vikings for sale of suites in the stadium. It was intended for use by the authority for their possession. In addition, because it was understood to work that way, the Vikings said, we will give the authority the tickets for those suites plus the stand-up areas, plus that because it's the authority using it, the authority was getting a discount on its concessions from Aramark, for example. So these are things that are in the use agreement that are anticipated because it was the governmental entity, that it would be used by the governmental entity exclusively, and that there was not going to be competition between the Vikings and the authority with respect to suite sales. If those suites were not going to be used by the authority, then they should not have taken the two suites in the negotiation. And as a consequence of the 2012 legislation as it was written and the use agreement as it is written, those would revert back as a revenue source for the Vikings.
Mr. Grimes, though, whether you have it as a consignment here in this language or you have a consignment and we tell you to go back with the MSFA and work out a deal that way, it's still it's the same concept. And so if it's wrong in the situation here, it would have to be wrong in the proposal that you are stating in your comments. So we're just following along with what was suggested and trying to incorporate that by your wishes. So I guess that's another thing. But Representative Sanstein, you have been very patient.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. One would be, would all of the employees be subject to the prohibition on political activity? And I'm not sure who that would be directed at.
This was the House language, and this is all of the employees that are part of the MSFA authority. So if you are a vendor that is coming into the stadium, if you work for the Vikings, it would not apply to you.
Okay. And then my second question is specifically, who would the employees of the authority be?
So I think, if I remember correctly, I think there's about nine employees. I think that's nine or seven. Seven employees.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the legislative auditor review language, and perhaps someone can help me understand when you look at page 12.20 to page to 12.25, it talks about that the auditor is requested to review the operations and management structure of major sports events facilities in Minnesota that are both publicly owned and publicly owned and publicly operated. So the first question is, can you name who would fall victim to this language here? Maybe victim is a strong word.
Come on, Senator Jeepers.
Who this would impact, let me put it that way.
Twins.
And then whether there's going to be revenue to pay for the legislative auditor to do such work.
Sure. Senator, this is the twins would be the ones that would be impacted by this. So there is no other entity that would fall under this. And Mr. Gearing can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that's my understanding. So it would just be the twins. They're the only one that are publicly owned and publicly operated in the state, much like the Viking Stadium. And then your second question was, help me.
Cost. Well, I guess
for the legislative auditor. Well, we give the legislative auditor tasks all the time. He is funded through the State Government Finance Committee, and this is just asking him to do this report as part of normal business and operation. Members, any other questions? Thank you. I believe that Commissioner Franz wanted to offer some testimony as well. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Myron Franz, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, thank you for letting me have this opportunity to go through the bill. I just had a couple of concerns I wanted to raise as we go through this bill. I've had an opportunity to speak with you, Chair Anderson, and you, Chair Rosen, before, and I know you've also talked with the governor about the bill and his concerns about the bill. And first of all, I just want to start off by saying that the governor, I think, has said to you both directly, and I said in public, he appreciates the work that the committees have done and reviewing the situation and making some really good changes and some good reforms. We really appreciate that. We understand that assuming the bill can get in the right form, that it's a great way to go forward and to really make sure that this important asset of the state is managed well and to the best interest of Minnesota. The governor, as you know, is committed to making sure that the stadium is the people's stadium and is used appropriately and efficiently. But there are some concerns I wanted to raise as I've reviewed the conference report. And I'd like to start on page 2, line 2.8, subdivision 11, prepayment of the bonds. I mean, one of the things that Mr. Michael described earlier is that we have to be careful about the way that we handle funds in this situation. For all of us who were here back in 2012, and I remember working with Mr. Michael late several nights during that stretch on this particular legislation, it was a complex deal. And as a complex deal, it was put together with, you know, three primary parties paying for the stadium, the Vikings in partnership with the state and the city of Minneapolis, using a number of different sources of revenue and trying to figure out different ways to manage those revenues using appropriation bonds, some tax-exempt bonds to make sure that we had the right mix. Obviously, with a situation where you have a private use in a building, you have to be careful about what kind of bonds you use, and that's why we didn't use general fund bonds because of the private use in this facility. But nonetheless, there are certain rules and procedures we need to follow. So the prepayment of bonds in concept is certainly a good idea, but one of the concerns that we have is that this can certainly be done. It's not that it's impossible, but it does create difficulties in managing. So to the extent that we collect a new revenue or new monies out of the authority and we want to set those aside for prepayment of the bonds, none of these bonds can be repaid until 2023. So the first thing we have to do is set up some agreement and some mechanisms where we collect that new revenue, put it aside, and make sure that that instrument that we use, and I'm on the edge of my knowledge here, I should have a bond lawyer here, but we have to put that in a situation so that it's in the right format and right conditions so that it's legally allowable to be used for repayment in 2023. To be frank, the amount of money that might be saved or redirected here is in several millions of dollars, which is not insignificant, but really, in our view, doesn't warrant the process going through here to go through that process to set aside this money for that special purpose. So we have concerns about the prepayment of bonds from a practical point of view, being able to do it in a way that we make sure that we dot all our I's and cross all of our T's. So that's a problem. We still have, I know there's been some changes to this language, but we still have some current concerns about that process. If you go to page five on the compensation, page 5.2 to 5.8, the compensation of the executive director of the authority, I think one of the concerns we had about the, especially the line that was added there about the chair shall receive the same compensation as the board members beginning in fiscal year 2019. And I certainly know that both chairs are amenable to having the current chair, Kathleen Blatz, testify about the compensation. But I think one of the things that we've learned and that in going forward with the new structure that's proposed, that the chair should not be a full-time, full-paid position. We agree with the committee and the way you've analyzed that situation. But we do think that it's a kind of a position that shouldn't just be paid on a per diem basis or like a board member. The extent to which we have this chair involved in this operation is really critical, and I think Chair Blatz can testify, if you want her to come and testify, about the difficulties in doing this in just a very part-time basis. She does it on a part-time basis, but to do it with just a per diem amount, we don't think really is fully realizing the extent to which we all want that chair, whoever it is going forward, to be really involved, and we think the pay should be something more than just a per diem. We're certainly open to different suggestions about that, but it's something we think that the board should set and have the authority to set. And we're also concerned about the salary of the executive director. We want to make sure that the executive director position is paid enough to attract the right kind of talented position. We're really fortunate right now to have former Supreme Court Justice Kathleen Blatz serving as the chair and Rick Evans serving as the executive director. I know you all have met with them. I've had the opportunity to meet with them and think they're doing a great job. In fact, I think part of what we need to do is let them do their job, and I'll have some comments about some of the other issues in the bill, but I think we've seen a real renewed optimism toward using this stadium efficiently, but I'm really concerned about the compensation level, both for the executive director and for the chair. The executive director provision is down 5.24 on that page to 5.3. 3-2 or somewhere along in there, where we should not exceed $135,000. We think that that is too low. Don't have a specific amount in mind, but think that we need to have a higher salary for that position going forward. We don't think that $135,000 is consistent with the sophistication and level of expertise we would hope to attract. My next comment would be on page 6, 6.19, employees' contracts for services, especially 6.21, 6.22, and that's the condition of employment. Employees may not engage in partisan political activity. We're concerned about the legal authority for making that determination and don't think it has any bearing on the people who work there, and we should not subject them to that unnecessary legal condition. If you look at page 7, 7.12, which is the consignment agreement that we heard testimony from Mr. Bagley and Mr. Grimes, we also have concerns about this. I actually haven't seen this language until this evening, and I'd like more time to look at it. I'd like to have my lawyers look at it a little bit more, because this goes back to the nature of the agreement and the nature of the complicated deal that was arranged. And one of the arrangements in the original deal in 2012 certainly was the two suites. And certainly I wouldn't quarrel necessarily with the legal authority to make these changes. I question whether it's the right public policy. And I question whether it's the right time to do it. One of the things that I'm questioning whether we should make these changes on a Friday night before the end of session, when we can look to the new authority or the current authority to come up with some suggestions about how to do this going forward, give them an opportunity to negotiate or come up with some proposals with the work of the Vikings, which I know that they'll be able to work with on something like this. And, for example, in the first paragraph, in paragraph A, where the final terms of the consignment must be approved by the chairs of the committees of the House and Senate with jurisdiction over the state government finance. I've never really seen anything quite like this before, and I don't understand why we would want the chairs of these legislative committees to be micromanaging this particular asset. Frankly, I've had worked for 30 years as a tax lawyer, run a small business, and I've been revenue commissioner and MMB commissioner, and I would have trouble knowing how to approve and figure out whether this was the right kind of consignment agreement between the authority and the Vikings. And so I'm concerned about the micromanaging that's involved in that paragraph. But just to follow up on Mr. Grimes' concerns, we're concerned about, once again, the monies that might be generated are not insignificant. I certainly understand and agree with that. But the question is the amount of money that might be generated from this agreement, is it worth the risk of the disruption of the agreement with the Vikings? Is it worth the need to set up a special process to set this money aside for the future repayment of bonds in 2023 and all that entails? So there are a number of concerns that I have with this particular new subdivision 16 and what it may or may not do. Once again, we would look to the new authority or the current authority to come up with proposals and ideas. I mean, I think one of the things that this committee, again, can take credit for is a new awareness and a new emphasis on making sure that this facility and the suites are managed effectively and efficiently and according to the law. So we're not questioning the concerns and the need to make sure this is done correctly. We're questioning whether we should put this in law and manage the facility in this particular way. I think the only other comment I had was on section, I guess, page 10 on the section, lines 10.27, 10.30. I guess those really just go along with the operating agreement and the way that these payments must be segregated. The only other concern I really had was on the effective date. That's on page 13, lines 13.11 through 13.14. We're afraid this may be too short of a time period to put in place a new board. So if, in fact, this legislation is passed, then we would need some time through the open appointment process to allow for people to make an application for appointment to this board. We think that the earliest we'd want to meet, at least have time until maybe July 30th, I guess it's July 31st, to make sure we have enough time to get this open appointment process worked through to make that effective, to give the governor that opportunity to make those appointments. So I guess I'm happy to take any questions, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Michael, I was hoping that you could walk us through on the prepayment of bonds and how the process works in getting the special treasury pieces. If you can speak to that. I know I'm not using the correct technical language. If you can help us out on that piece, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think as the commissioner testified, almost all tax-exempt or municipal bonds like this are issued that are, you cannot prepay them. They're unless you have a call feature on them, which it sounds like with this bond, it does not have a call feature. So it's not like your home mortgage where you can just start paying more principal and pay it down. There is a mechanism, though, that's used that's called defeasing bonds that the Treasury Department allows municipalities to do. And that basically is to put money in escrow, and the Treasury Department, the U.S. Treasury, has a special series of bonds that they issue for this purpose because under certain circumstances you can actually pre-refund bonds by issuing more tax-exempt bonds and putting the proceeds in escrow. That's not what would happen here, but instead essentially what would be done is these monies would be held in escrow and they could be used to purchase Treasury securities that then the value of the, obviously Treasury securities are the most secure debt instrument there is. And so the bondholders, knowing that you have an escrow, Treasury securities, and that those Treasury securities will earn interest, will regard their bonds as being now secured bonds that are the equivalent of Treasury bonds, and those monies will be held to essentially pay those obligations off as they come due, and those monies in escrow will earn interest that will offset the interest that you're going to pay on the bond. So effectively, even though you don't have a call option on the bond, you're effectively prepaying them. But as the commissioner said, this is a sort of complicated procedure, and there are, you know, some administrative costs with administering something like that. And what I hear is that MMB would prefer not to do that because of the amount of money that's involved. But it's a feasible, practical alternative way.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, this question is probably to you. This is a House provision, and I was just wondering what the reasoning behind it, having a separate account. And then I do have a question for the commissioner after this.
Sure. Well, during this whole process, the commissioner had expressed concerns about how we originally had the language drafted. And so in consultation with nonpartisan staff, we wanted to make sure that we had a mechanism in place that would protect the state's assets on this, because the two suites are part of the MSFA, that's under their control. And as a result of that, they are a state asset. And this was a way of being able to, rather than having those suites, prior to this, they had been used by friends and family and not by marketing. In fact, SMG had never been in the suites during the whole first season or for other purposes. And so rather than having it just sit there, this would be able to allow the state to protect their stake in this. And this was the proposal that we came up with in combination with the comments from the Vikings of the consignment piece of it. And just recognizing that we wanted to make sure we didn't get into the tax issues, because originally the language had some tax implications that Commissioner Franz had laid out, and so that addresses that. But I'm sure either Mr. McGeering or Mr. Michael can give greater clarity if you need it. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any other questions?
Oh, no, I do have another question.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Commissioner, Mr. Michaels mentioned that there would be some cost to this section, and I was wondering if you had an idea of how many FTEs, cost, and what would protect it from the legislature raiding this fund.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator, you know, I don't have an estimate of the cost. I mean, it's not going to take a full-time FTE. That's not the concern. It will take someone some time to set this up, and it will take them away from other duties. It's a matter of the amount of time it takes that person and the amount of time it takes us to contact and contract with a vendor or a financial institution to set up the instrument that we would use, and then to monitor that to make sure that as Mr. Michaels suggested, to make sure that the interest coming in was equal to or hopefully better than the interest being paid out. But it's the idea of setting it up, managing, making those cost payments that just are an added burden that we feel is not justified by the amount of money here. I certainly agree with you, Chair Anderson, that there's no one that wants to manage this asset or these assets, I think, more carefully than you do than the governor. I think you're both right on the same mark in that regard, and we do too. We're just concerned that this particular provision is not ready yet, and it may, in fact, I'm not suggesting this is not even the right thing to do eventually. I'm just concerned that this is not the right thing to do right now, and we'd like to have more time to work on a mechanism to make sure that whatever we decide to do with that extra suite is the right thing to do, and we make the best movement, we make the best decision on that in consultation with the Vikings and in consultation with the legislature. And this is a really important thing to get right, and I couldn't agree with you more that this is the kind of thing we need to do to make sure that we get the confidence of the Minnesota public and the confidence of the legislature back as we should. But I'm just concerned that this is not the right time to do it.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I mean, there is a potential of the legislature raiding this. Is it a special revenue fund or just a separate account in the general fund?
Madam Chair and Senator, I think the way we would set this up, Mr. Michael could maybe disagree or agree with me, but I think we would set this up in a way that would be difficult to get to this particular, but that is a worry you always have to be concerned about. But I think the way we would set this up, it would be even, yeah, I think we could keep this even from the legislature. All good intention aside there.
Well, Commissioner, and to your comments, I get very concerned about the idea of kind of kicking the can down the road on this piece of legislation. I think the public has waited long enough on this. This has been something in the progress for years, actually. I think 2015 was the first hearing that we had on this issue.
And
in 2015 on this issue. So they're looking for action from the legislature. I think that it is even more imperative that we have language in place, given the fact that we do have the Super Bowl coming here to the state of Minnesota. And I know that that was one of the concerns that you had expressed earlier on in session, that we needed to have something in place because we've got the Super Bowl coming. So this language certainly aims to do that and get us back on track and give the confidence back to the citizens that we are able to act quickly when there are problems like this. And, you know, quickly in legislative time is, let's see, January, February, March, April, May, 5 months. So I think anything beyond that becomes disheartening to the public that we wouldn't be able to act within the legislative cycle to address this. And I think when it comes to, you know, those are just some of my concerns. And, again, you know, you had expressed concern about the original language that we had in place and the tax implications that it had. And here we're coming forward with a solution that has part of the pieces from what the Vikings had offered as consignment as part of this piece. So I am concerned that we would think about kicking this down the road to a session that would be in
Well, if we don't start session until February of next year, so it will be another football season through another series of concerts and other events taking place at that facility, and just let it sit there. I think that that would be the wrong message, especially given the fact that we've all had conversations with the public about how we're going to get this fixed and get this done. I think 5 months is enough time. Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I was listening to your comments, and you're so eloquent as usual. You know, I served with you in the
you're
House.
You're such a charmer,
so
Senator.
I do miss you for being in the House. But there's an old song that says, never make your move too soon. And there's wisdom in that song, because in the lyrics, I'll say, is because even though we may have good intentions, I think we have to be very careful about the things that we do. Sometimes when we just do something because we want to respond, and it's not the right response because we haven't had enough time. And when I say time, time doesn't have to mean eternity. But what I think I heard, even when we look at this consignment language, that the Vikings came with an idea, but this isn't their fleshed out idea. And that the necessary parties didn't get around the table in order to really flesh the idea out and to take into consideration the bigger issue that appears to be the use agreement. How do we do it within the confines of that use agreement so that we are not only protecting the public's interest, but we are being mindful of the agreements that we have in place, and how can we be responsive in a way in order to go forward expeditiously? So, Madam Chair, I think that your concerns are definitely relevant, but I do think that maybe we should heed the thoughts from the Vikings and others that said, hey, we're interested in working on this. We want to work on this. We came to you with an idea. What's in the bill is not the idea that we came with. Let us flesh it out. Let us look at all the other significant issues like agreements, and then let us give you something that we all believe that we can live with. I just think that the language that we have here, and even listening to the commissioner, just seems to undermine everything that you really want to do. And so I just would hope that you would think about that in real time.
Well, you know, I appreciate your comments, Senator Champion. I still wish you were back in the House. You were always fun to have there.
She's telling the truth. I was fun to have in the House. Let me
he got all serious once he went to the Senate. Shoot. You know, I don't want you to walk away thinking that this was something that was put together on the back of a napkin in 5 seconds. I think Mr. Gehring can attest to the fact that I have gone through probably 1,000 versions, and so has Senator Rosen, on this piece of legislation, both to look at it from the perspective of, are we doing it the right way? Is this something that's going to be able to stand the test of time? And are we setting ourselves up for success? And so this is a product out of lots of deliberation, a lot of thought, a lot of conversations with different individuals to make sure that we have a solid product. But at the same time, also showing that we as a legislative body can work and we can get results within what most average Joe citizen would consider a reasonable amount of time. And at five months, most people think that we took too long. And that's just the reality of things. But that being said, we have spent that time being thoughtful and thinking about the ramifications that this will have. So I don't take this task lightly at all. I tell you, I have spent more time on this piece of legislation than I have spent on anything in my life, and that includes putting together finance bills. And even the redistricting bill. but I do appreciate your comments on that.
So I have one additional question.
Sure. Senator Champion.
Can you tell me what the current process is for the city of Minneapolis to appoint a person to be on the commission and whether that differs? It obviously differs from what's here, because it looks like now there's a requirement for whoever the city of Minneapolis appoints must meet the confirmation and approval of the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Sure.
So can you tell me what the thinking was around that and what the current process is now?
Sure. Mr. Gehring, I don't know if you want to walk through it, but under the current situation, there's five members to the commission. 3 appointed by the governor and 2 by the city of Minneapolis. And that's it. And Senator Rosen, this is part of your language, so I don't know if you want to speak to it.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Champion. This was a compromise piece of language. I felt very strongly to make sure that we adhere to the 2012 legislation that required the city of Minneapolis to have 2 appointments to the authority. And I knew that the governor felt very strongly about his 3 appointments. So in the spirit of compromise, I just had Senate confirmation in our original language, compromise to allow House confirmation that also you see as Senate and House confirmation with the Campaign Finance Board and I believe the Minshew Board. So it was a compromise piece to allow Senate and House confirmation.
And so, Madam Chair, my challenge with this is that the city of Minneapolis is its own body and should be able to make their choices based on who they believe should be there without oversight from or approval from the House or Senate. There hasn't been any issue up to this particular point that says that they are making bad appointments. And so I'm just concerned that it's in the city of Minneapolis. They have made an investment. They continue to make an investment. And now we are saying to them, or we would say to them in this legislation, if this bill as proposed goes forward, that yes, you can pay. Yes, it can be in your city, but we're going to decide whether we agree with whoever your selection is. And I just think that's the wrong way to go, not to mention the fact that it's my city and this stadium sits in my district as well. And so I just feel a little strongly about that. I just think that that's the wrong way to go.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No further comments. He has expressed that before on the floor, too. I do have a question, though.
Okay.
And I, Madam Chair, on page 7, line 1.14, the terms of the consignment must be approved by the chairs. I think I saw this earlier. I do tend to agree with the commissioner that I don't know if I've ever seen this before, where it needs to be approved by the chairs of the state gov finance in both House and the Senate. Your reasoning behind that, and I wonder if there's another more concise way that would be more consistent, I think, more consistent way of dealing with that.
Sure. So a couple of thought process on this. This is to provide legislative oversight still over this process because the concern has been that nobody's been watching over this, and that was the big part of the big problem when this all came to greater degree of light. And so recognizing that we need to have greater legislative oversight, but at the same time being accommodating for the concerns that the Vikings had expressed about data privacy and things of that nature with their competitors and the information that's out there, we wanted it to limit it in scope and to how many people that would be involved in this process. So it was recognition of data privacy, but at the same time making sure that we have legislative oversight. We could add you. I'm happy to do that, too. So doesn't matter to me. Commissioner Grant.
Madam Chair, I really appreciate your comments you made just a little bit ago about making sure that we get this done and get it done right. But I guess the concern that a lot of the things in the bill that I didn't go through and say what's great about the bill because there's a lot in there that we agree with and make a lot of sense.
You can do that.
We could be here all night, though. But, I mean, there is. And so and we obviously testify about the negative things more often than not. But the key is, though, that a lot of this can be done, in fact, some of it has already been done by the current authority in terms of the way they're managing the asset better now in terms of who's using the facility. They've adopted new policies. The point being is that the current authority could take this bill and adopt most of what's in the bill and go forward. We do not need a bill to accomplish the reforms. I'm not saying we don't want a bill, and a bill could be really very effective. But I do have to say that, you know, my recommendation to the governor is that if we're going to get involved in a situation with the suites, it's not going to get resolved. It's going to take extended negotiations and a problem. I don't even know whether we could get this implemented by the next season anyway. So I don't think we're losing a season. I don't think we're going to get this done in time for the next football season anyway. And so the concern is getting it done. You're right. Taking some action. And we're happy to support that. But we want to make sure it's done right. And so we don't want to add problems to a situation that is working itself out in many ways already. Agreeing that more needs to be done. I couldn't agree more, and the governor couldn't agree more. But there's a limit to what we need to do here, and I just need to bring that up to be clear about that.
Well, Commissioner, I appreciate your comments on that. I think when we're talking about saying that we're going to have MSFA make all the decisions and just incorporate this and trust in them to do that, I think in any other circumstance, I would be more than happy to do that. And I will tell you, I am not a legislator that creates bills for the sake of creating bills. If I can find a solution to do it outside of the legislative process, I do it in a heartbeat. And I've had conversations with your agencies on certain things like that to that effect on different issues for folks. So I'm not one that just throws out a bill for the heck of it. And I think my biggest concern is we need to restore confidence in the public that we are doing the right thing. And that requires legislative oversight. And that requires a piece of legislation like this. I think that the public is very weary. And I think that Justice Glatz is doing a fabulous job. But there's still some hesitation. And we need to make sure that we show that there's integrity in this process. And this legislation brings about that integrity. Also, I think that it becomes an issue for us. Again, it gets down to showing that we can create solutions and get the action done on this issue and get it taken care of. 5 months, like I said, is long enough for us to get to a solution. And I think that this legislation gets us to that point. And there's just a whole host of things that I could comment on. But I know, Representative Sanstey, you've been patient again. If you could, please.
Happy to wait. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question for you, Commissioner. It's a point of clarification more than anything. When you're talking about postponing or slowing this process down, are you talking about the bill in its entirety or just the use provision?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, a good question. Really concerned about Section 16 and this use provision. I mean, I mentioned some other concerns we had, but those were concerns that I've talked about with Chair Rosen and Chair Anderson before. And there are issues I think we can talk about and deal with, but really concerned about that new provision and getting that understood in a way and getting it implemented. That's my primary concern. I think that to try to get that implemented right now is a concern.
Zana?
Thank you.
I thought of what the other thing, too, is that I wanted to mention, and that's the issue of, you know, I think Justice Glatz is doing a great job right now, but she's not going to be there forever. And she took on the task itself, I think, as a favor to the state of Minnesota. And I think that speaks to her public servant heart that she has, and I'm very grateful that she was willing to come in and help kind of right the ship, if you will. But this legislation isn't just about the immediate moment. It's not about just this moment in time. It is about putting safeguards in place for the future. And so in the day and age that I'm no longer here, Senator Rosen's no longer here, all of us around this table, and Commissioner, you yourself, when
you're
we are gone.
You're a lot longer than me. So.
But when we are all gone, we want to make sure that this is set in place and that we are protecting this asset of Minnesota. So, Senator Champion.
Just one question. So, Commissioner, you mentioned to a very good question that you had concerns about Section 14. Do you also have concern about Section 16 and Section 18? Or is Section 16 the only one, the only?
I just mentioned some concerns. Part of the Madam Chair and Senator had mentioned that it's all related in terms of the prepayment of bonds and Section 2 and with this Section 16, but also had concerns about the compensation and Section 6, Section 9, the employee contract for services, no partisan activity in section, what is that, 12. And then the effective date, we need to work on the effective date because we need to have this effective, the new appointments not before, we don't think we can get that done until July 31st probably. I think those are it.
So thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask the Commissioner that question because I didn't want you to leave the conference committee with the impression that the only section 14 was the only one, and I can understand the way it all goes together and that embodies our concern.
Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just another quick question, a point of clarification. You mentioned section 16. Are you actually talking about section 14 subdivision 16?
Oh, I'm sorry. Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was looking at subdivision 6, and Senator Champion mentioned that. Section 14, subdivision 16 on page 7. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions for Commissioner? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So going along with the Commissioner's idea of if we held off a year, what's the financial impact maybe from staff of holding off on 1 year and what that would cause from a financial standpoint? Again, we're going into the Super Bowl. There are a lot of things that would have to take place with the appointment of the board. Just financially, what would the impact be by holding off 1 year on Subdivision 16?
Mr. Gehring or Mr. Michael? Well, it's the result. I mean, it's essentially the result of the $400,000, correct?
Madam Chair, I think that's accurate. I mean, you could assume that if nothing happens, those suites sit empty when during the football season, during concerts, and essentially there's lost value. One would assume that everyone would be interested in somehow putting those to their highest and best economic use and not, I don't know, but essentially the financial impact of the state is that it would forego $400,000 of reduced subsidy of operating costs for the facility.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, we are to the is there anyone else that wishes to testify? I should ask that. Okay. So, members, before us, we have the CCR HF0778. Mr. Gehring, what's the proper motion on this?
So, Madam Chair, that the conference committee would like.
Hang on. We do have Senator Rosen on page 5, section 6. Wants to add language,
yes,
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I perhaps need some advice on this. Line 6, the beginning in fiscal year 2019, I'd like to delete that sentence and add something like we will be looking at it again next year as far as compensation for the Executive Director.
Mr. Gehring?
Excuse me, for the Chair. This is for the Chair.
Yes, I
there's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done this year up to the Super Bowl and beyond. We have the Final Four afterwards, too, so I think it's fair to say that this needs to be reviewed again. I do not believe we're ever going to be able to recruit another Ms. Blatt to do this free gratis, and I would just like to have a fair compensation there for a good director.
And Mr. Gehring, do you see what what she's looking to achieve? And is it possible, do we need to do it here? Because I see that this is drafted instead of a DE, it's as a conference report. Or can we do it as part of the state government finance bill because that carried the stadium language there?
And just delete, Madam Chair.
And
And is there a way that we could do that, Senator Rosen?
Thank you.
Or Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, yes. So I think it's possible. This right now is drafted as a conference report, and the signature pages are ready to go. So if you'd like to sign it tonight, you need to, if you amended it tonight, you wouldn't be able to do the signatures yet this evening. So I think one option would be to, if the committee would like to go this route, would be to adopt the conference report as it is, and then in a later bill, possibly the State Government Finance Bill, we could do a correction amendment to amend this section as amended by the conference report to incorporate your suggested language.
Senator Rosen, does that work?
Yes, Madam Chair, that'd be fine. I do have another question, too, Madam Chair.
So I just want to make sure that we're clear. Mr. Gehring, you will make sure that that happens.
Okay. Page 13, the effective date, seems to be some problems.
So, Senator Rosen.
So, Madam Chair, if they could be able to get that done, the appointments of the authority by June 10th. I understand that's...
I think that when we had conversations, if you were interested, I think if we said that the appointing authorities must appoint new members by July 15th, if I remember from our conversations, that was the date that was offered.
So, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, is that something else that you need to fix then in your state government?
Mr. Gehring, can we do that as well?
Okay. So, Madam Chair, just to make sure that we'll be deleting that line as far as 5.6, deleting that line, and then
with direction that we would have review again in the 2018 legislative session.
Perfect.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is that good? So with that, Mr. Gehring, what is the proper motion for us?
So, Madam Chair, then if the committee is not interested in adopting any amendments tonight, then the motion would be to adopt the conference report, which is labeled CCR HF0778.
Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen? Okay. Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair, I move the conference committee report on House File 778 be recommended pass. Send to the floor.
Okay.
Is that the motion?
That's the motion. The motion is before us. Members, all those in favor of that, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Members, just want to say thanks again. Do we have any other things that we need to do, Mr. Gehring, from a procedural standpoint? Okay, we just have to sign the report here, so please stick around so you can sign that report. And I just want to thank everybody for being part of this process, and I appreciate your time. And with that, we are adjourned.